Grade 4 Conference, Lecture 30, Norse Mythology, Part 8. In books such as Occult Science or lecture cycles such as At the Gates of Spiritual Science, in much of the work that Rudolf Steiner did between 1910 and 1912, we can find again and again the cosmological picture that he gives of Earth creation and evolution. You can also find a greatly simplified version of what he had to say in the Steiner course materials that I've included. For those of you already familiar with the general outline, I will just go over it in a skeletal way. He speaks of there being at first what we would call nothingness or chaos, but which he says actually was an already quite formed universe, which he speaks of sometimes as being a frozen universe, a universe that was absolutely perfect, crystalline in its perfection, and one which then had to be deconstructed so that it could be reformed as an evolving universe. And this is another one of the many revelations that Steiner gave, that it's not that there was nothing at first and something happened, which is the impression that we could get from the Hebrew scriptures, but rather something was already there and it was perfect, and yet God, for his own reasons, wanted it to become imperfect so that a new kind of perfection entirely could be striven for. And this is where we begin with Saturn, old Saturn, a very, very large planetary body that stretched as far as the distance from the Sun to the orbit of today's Saturn, and which was a body of warmth. Nothing to see, nothing to hear, simply warmth. In some places, moderate, in others, like blistering heat. That then had to go through a kind of dissolution, a pralaya, a state of non-existence, out of which it was reborn again. Old Saturn was recapitulated, but now a contracting experience occurred, and we have the old Sun stage in which light was added to warmth, and we could say that a quality of airiness came about as the result of this. So now we have not only the original crystalline quality, the cold, impersonal universe that preceded everything, not only Saturnine warmth, but also sunlight. And this was a planet that we could say was as large as the distance from the Sun to the Earth is today. Once again, it dissolved. Pralaya was reborn. There was a recapitulation of Saturn, a recapitulation of Sun, a contraction occurred, and out of this old moon was born, in which now we start to see something of a physical-like structure. Physical laws were there, but there was nothing mineral yet. It was all in a state of thicker or less thick liquid form. Somewhere between molasses and volcanic lava, everything in liquefied form. That eventually gave way to another dissolution, another pralaya, and then after, relatively speaking, rapid recapitulations of old Saturn warmth, old Sun light, old moon liquefaction, we come to the earth where physical laws and physical forces are filled in with mineral substance, where all becomes hard and firm, the firmament, and where now the forces, particularly of the sun and the moon, are brought into a regular relationship with one another, so that we can speak of day and night, we can speak of time moving in a recognizable way, and cycles and so on, and the earth that is spoken of most beautifully and profoundly in the tales of Genesis. So keep this anthroposophical picture of earth unfolding and development. Saturn, old sun, old moon, and earth in your mind as we look at the creation story that comes to us from the Norse myths. So at the beginning, we have already extant two worlds. One of them is called Niflheim, and this is a world of that is frozen, that we could say is foggy, but the fog is actually like that of a crystal curtain. And Muspelheim, which is a place of great fire and warmth. And these two worlds are kept far, far apart from one another, and this gap between them, and here's a word that comes over into English, the gap, is called Ginnungagap. You can feel the vastness of that separation of those two worlds. So for a long time, these two worlds emanate their ice crystals on the one hand, their flames on the other, but hardly meet, until such a time came that they began to flow together to meet each other, and the fire met the ice, and there was life. There was a little spark of life. We can almost think of a kind of alchemical process in an alembic, that device where a fluid is boiled, and as it condenses, then it starts to drip out somewhere else so that you can get a wonderful distillation. So we might say that this life that was engendered was a kind of distillation of the qualities of what lived in these two contrary elements. And out of this spark of life meeting fluid arose a giant, who is never spoken of as the way man, Adam, is spoken of in the Hebrew scriptures. From the start, we're told he's pretty ugly, pretty horrendous, and his name is Ymir, Y-M-I-R, and he is now the one who's going to engender a race of giants. And he sees off in the fog, because everything to his consciousness is very, very foggy, there is as of yet no light coming out of this fire. So sort of in the darkness, he realizes that a cow has also arisen out of this mixture of fire and ice. And immediately he is suckled and nurtured by this cow, drinks her milk, and he grows gigantic. And she has a name as well, of course. Her name is Audhumla. So these two now are the only creatures who are extant in this world, a giant and his cow. And I can mention that again, out of Steiner's picture, He speaks of the Archai who go through their human stage in old Saturn under very different circumstances, which is why they cannot connect too readily to human beings. But he also says that the fact that there could be even the seeds for the physical world, that there could be physical forces coming into being in old Saturn, was because of the sacrifice of the thrones. And the thrones are beings who belong to the first hierarchy. They are third in line in the first hierarchy. They are right under the cherubim, who themselves are working for the seraphim, the highest of the angels, of the angelic beings, as they're called, of the hierarchies. So we could say that we are seeing something here of the giving over, the endowing of the physicality of a very lofty spiritual being or a set of such beings who in turn must let this drop into a very different form of existence. So at first, it's not entirely so beautiful. And while he is sleeping, because his consciousness, this Ymir, is very, very sleepy, he actually starts to engender other giants, and they are called Jotuns, a word that you're going to be saying very often. They don't exactly go away in the stories, and they're a big part of the drama of the Norse stories. So it said, in one armpit, a male and a female Jotun were born to then continue now the race of the giants. And a troll sprouts from his feet. And they all have tremendous reproductive forces. They all start to give birth to more and more. And suddenly this world is populated with not quite the most beautiful of all creatures. And Ymir notices that the cow has gone over to a kind of great mountain of ice, a kind of glacier, and she starts to lick it. And she licks and licks, and she's sculpting something. She's removing the ice, and within this ice is a form unlike anything Ymir has ever seen before. Because she's licking to nourish herself from this ice so that she can keep feeding Ymir and all that has come from Ymir, all of these giants and trolls. But now a head of hair appears out of the brine. And as she keeps licking, a face appears and shoulders, a chest, a whole new creature appears. And we could say that this is sort of the beginning of the art of sculpture, just the way you'll see in seventh grade Michelangelo describes it. All I'm doing is finding what's already there in that hard marble. He or she finds it in the ice. And Ymir doesn't like this beautiful, radiant creature who seems to have a quality of light coming out of him. And now this creature has a son immediately. You could see these forces of reproduction, the life forces, were very, very powerful. Also handsome, beautiful. And he takes for his wife a maiden from the Jotuns. So a giant is taken over by this handsome figure. As the Hebrew scriptures said, the sons of God took to themselves the daughters of the earth. Something of that is going on here as well. And she then gives birth. And now there are three radiant, beautiful sons born to them. And their names are Odin, Honir, and Lodur. These are the three prime gods, the three progenitors of the Æsir. And they now had a power beyond that of Ymir. And Ymir wants to destroy them immediately, and they feel the same about him. Let's go on in the next lecture.